Hey, gentlemen. So I want to welcome you to the beginning of the lab. I have never been here in a mask before. It's an unusual experience. I've also never been here before where I have sitting in front of me and some people don't go across the planet. We hope it works. We'll do the best we can. And let's learn some Torah. Okay, so we are beginning the third parak of Shabbos. Let me just give you a brief overview of what our plans are for the semester and how we plan on doing things. I plan on teaching the halachos of Shabbos through the Gemara, which means we're not going to really go in the order of Shulchan Aruch, which is not such a nutty idea because Shulchan Aruch's sequence in Hilchos Shabbos makes absolutely no sense. Most areas of halacha, the Shulchan Aruch makes some sense the way he put things together. Hilchos Shabbos, if I want to study for, it begins, it makes sense. It begins with like the laws of Erev Shabbos, you're supposed to shower before Shabbos, you're supposed to light candles before Shabbos, and then somehow it ends up in the laws of cooking, in Siman Resh Nun Gimel. So far, so good. And then the rest of the laws of cooking on Shabbos are found in Siman Shin Yud Ches. Why this happened, I have no idea. Not only that, but Shulchan Aruch puts the halachos, which are derabbanan, the rabbinic halachos, before the halachos, which are deraisa. This seems to be totally counterintuitive. Why do we have the rabbinic halachos before the Torah laws? On one occasion, I asked Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, who might be one of the world's three smartest people, I asked Dr. Soloveitchik, what exactly is the reason? He told me he did not know. He himself published a seminal article about the sequence of the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos. My guess is that because Dr. Soloveitchik's brother-in-law spent time on the Shulchan Aruch and he spent time on the Rambam, he didn't want to deal with this, but I don't want to get involved in family dynamics. The sequence of Hilchos Shabbos should be first you have Dinim Doraisa, then you have Dinim Derabanan, etc. We are not doing that. The Dinim Doraisa of Shabbos, in terms of cooking on Shabbos, there are differences between cooking salads and cooking liquids on Shabbos. We will cover them later on in the semester. But we begin the third parak of Shabbos, which is the parak that deals with cooking. Cooking in Masechta Shabbos comes up towards the beginning of the Masechta. Parak 1 of Shabbos deals with carrying. Carrying is listed first in the Masechta because carrying is a prohibition unlike all the others. Carrying, unlike all of the other prohibitions of Shabbos, does not involve any sort of change in object. Carrying comes first. Then we have the halachos of lighting candles on Shabbos. So far, so good. Going in the order of the day. Then cooking. Because cooking comes up. Cooking comes up. You have to cook before Shabbos. So this all makes sense. But when I talk about cooking in the beginning of the third parak, I'm speaking about the rabbinic prohibitions of cooking. Now, here's the thing. The Torah, what we mentioned, is differences between cooking solids and cooking liquids and cooking non-food items as well. But you can cook metal. When you liquefy metal, that's called cooking. We're going to encounter a Gemara later on in the year about cooking wood on Shabbos, theoretically, right? You can heat the wood so that the water escapes from it. That's like cooking a non-food item. So those are Torah laws of cooking. What we're going to talk about, however, are rabbinic laws of cooking. And generally speaking, it's assumed that there are three different categories of rabbinic. Hello?
I'm listening to Ezra Shear.
Yeah, there are three different categories of cooking. If I could ask people to please just mute your mics until you want to ask a question, that will be easier. But there are three different rabbinic categories of cooking on Shabbos. They are called shehiyah, hachazara, and hatmana. Shehiyah means that you have food, And the food was left on the stove from before Shabbos. I have food and I leave the food, let's say, on an open fire. I started that process before Shabbos. So then the issue is, can I leave that food on the open fire once Shabbos begins? Do I have to be worried that maybe a person might stoke the coals? You want the food to cook faster, you might stoke the coals. So that is Shehiyah. There's another prohibition that we'll encounter in Tudapim, Adaf Lamed Ches, and we encounter it kind of right at the beginning of the Perek, which is called Hachazara. Hachazara means an item which was on the fire before Shabbos. Again, according to most opinions, this is the way we define it. An item was on the fire before Shabbos, and then the item is removed, and now I want to hachazar, I want to return it to the fire on Shabbos. So there are rules and regulations about that. Then there's a third prohibition related to Hilchos Shabbos, a third rabbinic prohibition, and that's called hatmana. Hatmana means that you are insulating the food. You're insulating the food in that you wrap it up, and that's a way of having the food retain its heat. That's another rabbinic prohibition called hatmana. And one of the first sources I gave you is a Gemara on Daf Lamed Daled Amud Aleph, 34a going over to 34b. The Gemara tells me that there are two different types of hatmana. There are two types of insulation. If you'd ask a contractor, they would tell you that there are many different types of insulation, but we're only dealing with two types of insulation. One is insulating the food before Shabbos begins. And then there's another prohibition of insulating the food on Shabbos itself. And the Gemara tells me that on Shabbos, I'm not allowed to insulate the food even if it is something that is not Mosif Hevel, even if it does not add heat. Again, I have no idea what this means chemically, but the Mishnah at the beginning of the fourth parak tells me that there are certain things, like the residue from an olive press, somehow that is Mosif Hevel. Somehow that increases the heat. I thought it might have something to do with, I'm not sure. Do any of you compost? If you don't, it's a good idea that you should. But if you compost, so the compost pile gets hot over time, the organic materials break down and they add some sort of heat. I thought maybe that's what's meant. But the things that are listed in the Mishnah, for example, gefes, which is the residue from the olive press, that is called Mosif Hevel. Something that is Mosif Hevel, you are not allowed to insulate food on Erev Shabbos. Something that is Mamid Hevel, something that just retains the heat. So if it just retains the heat, you're allowed to do that before Shabbos begins. But once Shabbos begins, you are not allowed to insulate your food with something that is Mamid Hevel. And the Gemara asks, what's the reason for these prohibitions? So on Daf Lamed Daled Amud Aleph 34a, Rebbe tells me that if it's something that's not Mosif Hevel, if it's something that just retains heat, it does not add heat, so the concern is Gezeirah Shema Yartiyach. The concern is that you might cook the food, you might heat it up. I'm insulating the food. I'm insulating the food because obviously I want hot food. If my food is not as hot as I'd like, I might actually cook it. So I'm not allowed to insulate my food. I can't wrap my food up with something that is Maimed Hevel. It's not Mosif Hevel, it just retains the heat. It doesn't add the heat because Gezeirah Shema Yartiyach, you might end up cooking that food on Shabbos. But when it comes to insulating from before Shabbos begins, so that's a davar that is Mosif Hevel. So in that case, the Gemara says, the concern is that if we will allow you to insulate your food with something that adds heat, so you might insulate your food with remets. Remets is a mixture of ashes and coals. I might insulate my food with that mixture. The Gemara says, what's the big deal? Do it. Who cares? The Gemara says, no. You can't do that. Because if you would insulate your food with this mixture of ashes and coal, so then you might stoke the coals. And stoking the coals on Shabbos would be a dual prohibition of igniting a fire and extinguishing a fire. Right? When you stoke coals, you're igniting these coals, extinguishing those coals. So the Gemara says that there is a prohibition of insulating food with a davar that is mosef hevel. I cannot do this even before Shabbos, something that adds heat, because maybe people will mistake the residue from the olive press with this mixture of ashes and coals. And if they would insulate with a mixture of ashes and coals, they might come to stoke the coals, which would be the double violation of extinguishing and igniting. That's what the Gemara says. Okay, deep breath. So we have three rabbinic prohibitions, just to review. Shehiya, leaving food on the flame from before Shabbos. Hachazara, which is returning food to the fire on Shabbos. And Hatmana, which is insulating. Our Mishnah says, right, our Mishnah on Lamed Vav Amud Beis tells me, Kira shehi sikuha v'kashu gvava, nosnin aleha tavshil. If I have a stove, again, a kira is a particular type of stove. If you're interested in Professor Daniel Sperber's book, he has various pictures of what the kira at the time of the Gemara looked like in the Steinsaltz. It's a friend of Rav, Rabbi Steinsaltz. In his Gemara, he also has some pictures of exactly what the kira was. It was an area that you could put two pots. One pot would be on top. One pot is inside. That's a kira. Again, Professor Sperber shows you actual pictures of real kiras from the time of the Gemara, as opposed to just taking the description in the Gemara and try to create your own image of it. So I have a kira. So if the kira is fired with kash and gevava are two different types of straw. One is the straw that remains in the ground after you cut it. The other is the straw that comes up when you cut it. Okay, here's the thing. When I cut something, so some of the stuff remains in the ground, some of the stuff comes up from the ground. It happens that Rashi and Tosos disagree over here, which one is kash, which is gevava. Did anyone notice this? There's a French word that they use, again, an old medieval French word called ishtubla, right? Which I think means stubble of some sort, ishtubla. Rashi uses the term ishtubla for gevava. Tosis uses the term ishtubla for kash. So there's a dispute between Rashi and Tosis exactly how you translate the terms. Quite honestly, these issues have never gotten me that excited. The Beis Halevi, for some reason, wrote an essay at the end of Parshas Shmos, when Paro tells the Jewish people that I'm not going to give you kash and tevin, something like that, no? So the Beis Halevi has an essay about what is kash, what is tevin. Okay.
Definition.
What?
Definition.
Definitions. Right, the briskers are into definitions, that's right. So what do I have? So I have an oven that is ignited with straw, basically. The thing about straw is it does not leave any coals or ashes. If you burn straw or you burn paper, right? Fahrenheit 451, you burn paper, so it will not really leave any ashes. It might leave black paper shreds, but there's going to be nothing hot that remains. If you fire the oven, however, with gefes and etzim, if you use wood and this residual stuff from the, Rashi over here says shumshamin, from the sesame seeds, if you fire the oven with that, so then it leaves some sort of hot item behind. So the Mishnah says that if you fire the oven with gefes and etzim, so lo yitain ad sheyigrov or ad sheyitain asa efer. I cannot place food until I do either garuf. Garuf means I scoop it away, or ad sheyitain asa efer, or I put ashes. One of the guys told me this morning that he just finished learning Mishnayos and Maseches Tamid. In Tamid, they speak about various utensils that the Kohen would use on the Mizbeach. One of them is a magrefa, which is a type of shovel that you shovel the ashes away. No? That's the word garuf. You are, right, same shoresh, magrefa, garuf. You are shoveling the ashes away. So you can't use a kira that is ignited with wood unless you shovel the ashes away. Or you katum. Katum means that you put some cold dirt or ashes on top of the warm coals. Right? That's the idea.
It doesn't accomplish the same thing. So, one is much more dramatic than the other.
So what you're asking, what Natty is asking, is that they don't accomplish the same thing. Because when I remove the coals, it's going to obviously be much less hot than if I put some ashes on top of the coals. Is that your question? Okay, good question. But you're making an assumption. Your assumption is that when you take your shovel and you remove the coals, you are removing the coals completely. You're taking the coals completely out of the oven. That's actually, right, you're a Sfaradi, so you like the Rambam. That's what the Rambam says. Right? The Rambam says that when you do Garuf, you're completely removing the ashes. However, the Ran over here, the Ran prefers the approach of the Baal HaMo'ar, of Reb Zerachya Halevi, who says that Garuf does not mean you completely remove the ashes, you just move the ashes over to the side. So the ashes are still inside the oven, but they are not directly where you have your pot. That is what garuf is. Now, what does katum do? Katum is, I put some cold stuff on top of my coals. Right? I put ashes or dirt, let's say. My son was like very excited. He goes to this camp in the summer called Yagilu. It's like a wilderness camp. So in Yagilu, they have a 10-day bushwhack where they spend time like in the middle of the forest and they make Shabbos in the middle of nowhere. So one of the things that they did is they had a chalent that they made on top of open fires, right, in the middle of this nowhere place, this bushwhack. They had a great time. So my son is like, oh, now I understand what these Mishnayos that we have learned are. Like, you have wood, a wood fire. How do you leave your chalent on the wood fire? You do garuf v'katum, right? Either you take the wood away. Well, that's going to be difficult because then your chalent won't be hot, especially according to the Rambam that you remove the coals completely. No. Katum is you put ashes on top of the coals. What does katum do? So the majority of Rishonim learn that what Katum does is Katum is some sort of heker. It's a reminder. It reminds me not to stoke the coals. Rashi, however, has a different take on Judaism. Now, look at Rashi, gentlemen. Rashi writes, right, ad sheyigrov, okay. So Rashi says you have to remove the coals. Mishum de Mosef Hevel, I want to talk about that in 2 minutes. Oh, actually, Yitain Efer, next Rashi. Al Gabe Gecholam, you put the ashes on top of the coals. The way we have the text of Rashi says, Lichasotam ulitzaninam. Lichasotam means you are covering the coals. And I get the impression from Rashi that I am covering the coals completely. Unlike the Ran, who says that it's just a heker, it's just a reminder, And therefore, the Ran quotes from a Yerushalmi that you only have to put a tiny drop of ashes on the coals. Rashi sounds like you are covering the coals completely and you are cooling it down. There's another text of Rashi, which is found in Rashi on the Rif. Now, comment. Rashi on the Rif is make-believe, no? Rashi never wrote a commentary on the Rif. But someone in the medieval period took ideas from Rashi and he stuck them on the Rif. So the way we have the Rashi on the Rif, instead of the word l'chasotam, it says, anyone noticed? L'chabotam. Right? Instead of l'chasotam, it says l'chabotam, which means I am putting the ashes on the coals in order to extinguish the coals. By the way, you can do this, no? If you want the fire to go out, so what you could do is you take a whole barrel of dirt and you put it on the fire, chick, chack, boom, the fire goes out, no? That's not symbolic. That is a ton of dirt on top of the fire. You are extinguishing the fire completely. Natty, you had a comment? Now, the beauty of Rashi is what Rashi is saying is you have to cool it down, no matter what, whether I have the text of L'chasotam or the text of L'chabotam. By the way, the Or Zeruah. The Or Zeruah is a German Rishon. No? Actually, he was Austrian, but Austria and Germany is the same thing, right? The Or Zeruah has a comment. Also, he quotes Rashi as L'chabotam, not L'chasotam. I just noticed this last night. I got like so excited. Like, all right, this is new. I've never said this before. Oh. Now, what Rashi is saying is that the problem in our Mishnah is a problem that I have something that is Mosef Hevel. I have something which is increasing the amount of heat. And therefore, Rashi says, you know what you're going to do, gentlemen? You're going to cool the coals down or extinguish the coals so it no longer is increasing the amount of heat. That is Judaism according to Rashi. So far, so good? But here's the thing. These terms, increasing heat, not increasing heat, which rabbinic prohibition do we find those terms? Hatmana, right? The prohibition of insulating. Rashi is learning our Mishnah about the prohibition, that it relates to the prohibition of hatmana. It relates to the prohibition of insulating. That is Rashi. And all of the Rishonim, right, beginning with the Balei HaTosfos over here, Dibur HaMaskol Lo Yitein, and you can go through all the Rishonim. I didn't give you such an extensive list, but if you want to look at the Rashba and the Ran and the Ramban and the Ritva, right, they all say the same thing, right? They all argue on Rashi, and they say, my dear beloved Rashi, right, your understanding that our Perek relates to the prohibition of insulating, and maybe what motivated you is because the third parak of Shabbos, here's the Chiddush, gentlemen. The third parak comes after the second parak, before the fourth parak. Right? Everyone got that? Three is after two, before four. The end of the second parak relates to hatmana, insulating. The beginning of the fourth parak relates to insulating. So Rashi says, well, the third parak comes, right, is stuck between, is insulated between the second parak and the fourth parak. So the third parak is also about insulating. That's what Rashi says. The Gemara, of course, seems against Rashi, no? Doesn't the Gemara ask a question? Are we taught, which prohibition are we talking about? Ibayalahu, hai lo yitein lo yachazir? Right, does the Mishnah deal with the prohibition of hachazar, of returning the item to the fire in Shabbos? Or does it deal with the prohibition of shehiyah, of leaving the food on the fire Right? The food was there from before Shabbos and you're leaving it on the fire. Which prohibition are we talking about? The Gemara asks, Hachazara or Shehiya? And that's very relevant, and that we'll talk about God willing tomorrow, etc. But Rashi somehow understands that the prohibition in our Mishnah is dual. It is both about Shehiya / Hachazara, one of them, and it is about Hatmana. It is about insulating. And that is because, gentlemen, Rashi assumes that fundamentally there is no distinction between the prohibition of insulating and the prohibition of leaving the food on the fire from before Shabbos, etc. Zero distinction. That's what Rashi says. And this opinion makes it to a Tosfot on Mem Zayin Amid Beis, no? The first Tosfos in the fourth parak. Tosfos quotes Rashi's grandson, the Rabbeinu Shmuel, the Rashbam, that the Rashbam tells me that all of the leniencies which I have in the Gemara about Shehiya apply to Hatmana also. Okay, let's go back. Under which circumstances can I leave food on a fire from Erev Shabbos? And I'm talking about an uncovered fire. So we'll discuss that the food has to be cooked to a certain extent. And then you can leave it on an uncovered fire from before Shabbos. What that extent is, a third, a half, all the way that it does not improve at all the way that it improves a little bit, right? There's going to be four possibilities, by the way. But there is a degree of cooking at which you're allowed to leave the food on an open fire from before Shabbos. There's also a halacha on Daf Yud Ches that we'll encounter, that food which is completely raw, you're allowed to leave on an open fire from before Shabbos. Right, remember, the concern is that maybe you'll stoke the coals. I'm not going to stoke the coals at all if it won't help. Siz helft garnished. It won't help at all. The food is completely raw. I could stoke those coals heint bis morgen. I could stoke it from today to tomorrow. By the way, if by the end of the semester you do not master at least 20 new Yiddish terms, I have failed. Okay? That's very important, gentlemen. Right? Yiddish is a language that the Jewish people have been speaking for 1,000 years. I think Professor Shikko Fishman has a book called Atoizent Yor Yiddish, right? You have to know Yiddish, right? Or else, like, what are we doing here? Sfardim also spoke Yiddish, and I have proof. Hashem gave the Torah to the Jewish people in 70 languages. Those 70 languages were 69 dialects of Yiddish and one other language. Right? So Sfardim spoke Yiddish. That's obvious. You're not going to get me on this. The point is that Tosfos on Daf Mem Zayin tells me that all the leniencies I have in the Gemara with respect to Shehiya, I'm allowed to leave food on an open fire from before Shabbos if the food is completely raw. I'm allowed to leave food on an open fire on Shabbos if it's cooked to some extent. I'm allowed to leave food on an open fire on Shabbos if it's impossible to access the food, right? If it is completely locked, that it's not possible to stoke the coals. All of those leniencies which are found in the Gemara about leaving food from before Shabbos, the Rashbam says they apply as well to insulating on Shabbos. Insulating for the Rashbam is governed by the same rules as Shehiya, as leaving the food on the open fire. And Rashbam's brother, Rabbeinu Tam, right? It must have been such fun at the Shabbos meals, no? The grandfather Rashi says an idea, then the two grandchildren like fight about what exactly he said, no? Right? The Rashbam's brother, Rabbeinu Tam says, no, dear brother Rashbam, you got it all wrong. And Shehiya is a totally different prohibition than Hatmana. Right? Insulating is completely different than leaving food on the open fire from before Shabbos. And when it comes to insulating, I do not have any of the leniencies that I encounter when it comes to leaving food on the open fire. The Rabbeinu Tam completely disagrees with the Rashbam. Now, the Rashbam, when he tells me that the leniencies of Shehiya apply to Hatmana, probably what's going on is the Rashbam is amplifying an idea that he heard from the Zayda. Because Rashi says that they are the same. Rashi learns our entire perek about Hatmana. That's the way the Ran and the Bahamar, all the Rishonim ask on Rashi. You're learning that the third perek of Shabbos is about insulating. What do you mean? The Gemara says it's about Shehiya. The answer is Rashi says they are verbundic. They're connected. It's the same prohibition. Insulating is exactly the same in Halacha as Shehiya. Now, let's take a deep breath, right? And we just understood Rashi, and we connected Rashi to his grandson's opinion on Mem Zayin on the base. Avery, is this the way you learned the Tosis of Mem Zayin? Did you get that far?
We discussed how many prohibitions, you know, were being discussed.
Okay, now so you spoke about whether the prohibition is Shehiya or Hatmana, etc.
They were connected, yeah.
And Rashi is clearly saying that they're connected. And what I'm trying to argue is that Rashi's grandson, the Rashbam, says they are not just connected, but all the halachos of Shehiya can be carried over to Hatmana. By the way, this position of the Rashbam is not completely rejected. It's rejected, but not completely. Okay, let me read Shulchan Aruch to you in Simen Reish Nun Zayin, Se'if Zayin. The Ramah in Shulchan Aruch writes, right, Reish Nun Zayin 257, Se'if 7. The Ramah writes, V'yesh mekilin v'omrim, dekoshu chai legamre onet bashel kol tzarko, mutter v'hatmana kamo b'shihoy. There are those who say that if something is completely raw or it's completely cooked, hatmana, insulating, is permitted, just like it's permitted of shehiya, like we said in Reish Nun Gimel. U'bimokim shenahagu lahokya pisvar ezu, ein limchos b'yadam. Remember, this is the Ramah. Ramah loves minhagim, no? But the Ramah also loves Torah. So the Ramah says, okay, you have such a practice, right? Don't protest. If you see people who do this, don't protest what they're doing. But don't extend this practice. This practice is wrong. Right? So you don't have to scream at people. By the way, it's interesting that Shulchan Aruch tells us some, right, the Ramah has expressions, ein limchos biyadam, you don't have to protest. Right, sometimes people think there's a mitzvah to protest on every single infraction. Right, the Ramah tells me not to protest, or when to protest. Sometimes, it doesn't mean that every individual should do like vigilante Torah justice and like protest whenever you see someone doing something wrong. It probably means the community rabbi should, if you see that the community is making a mistake, so the community rabbi has a responsibility to tell the community, stop this. But let's say you have a community that is lenient and follows the leniency that if food is completely raw, they insulate the food on Shabbos. Says the Ramah, don't protest. You don't have to scream at them. It's not a bad thing. Again, probably it's not that you don't have to scream at them. Ein limchot probably means don't scream at them, right? That's what the Ramah says. That means that this opinion is not completely rejected. Ein limchot came b'shar mekomos. But the opinion of the Rashbam seems to make it.
Could I ask a question about hatmana?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's not clear to me that's when the food is insulated. It's not clear to me whether there's an independent heat source over Shabbat. So are you just taking something warm and covering it and keeping the heat in, or is there a source of heat that's keeping it warm? So is it right. on coals, or is it on an oven?
Remember, the Gemara on Daf Lamed Daled tells me that there are two different types of hatmana. There's hatmana where it's adding heat, which is forbidden even before Shabbos, and then there's hatmana that just retains the heat, which is only forbidden on Shabbos. Now, we'll have to deal with the prohibitions. Is it forbidden, for example, to take my potato kugel and to wrap it up with tinfoil? Right? Isn't that insulating? So everyone says that's permitted.
Because it's already hot.
It's already hot. It's already fully cooked. So according to the Rashbam, it's permitted. But even if you don't accept the Rashbam, sometimes I cover something in order to just make sure it doesn't get dirty or it doesn't fall apart, no? That's not called insulating. For some reason, we'll have to develop this idea more as the semester goes on, but for some reason, the prohibition of insulating has a lot to do with what I am thinking, what my intention is. So if I cover food with the intention of retaining the warmth, that's a prohibition. But if I cover food with the intention of keeping the food clean, it's exactly the same thing, no? I'm taking the same piece of tinfoil and I am covering it. But what goes on in my mind changes whether it's permitted or forbidden. That's a really interesting idea that we'll have to develop as time goes on. Yes, Nettie. So insulation needs an insulator. Let me push back on you. How are you understanding the word insulator?
Metal conducts heat.
But there's also the idea, remember, insulation means something that retains heat is also called insulation in halacha. Now, to be insulated has to be that it's touching the food item, no? That's why I gave the example of tinfoil. If I put food inside a box, right? I put my food in a container, that's not insulating by any stretch. But if it's touching the food, that's considered insulation in halacha. Now, Rashi says insulating is the same thing as leaving. They're governed by the same rules. Tosfos says that, my dear Rashi, we love you, Rashi, but you totally blew this, right? Tosfos quotes, let's read this Tosfos together. Tosfos lo yitein ad sheyigrov. Tosfos writes, Pirish bekuntris, Rashi says, mishum tosefes hevel. Rashi says that the concern is that there is added heat, right? Which means the concern is hatmana. Insulating. The einer elavi, the afilo gerufa uketuma, he mosefes hevel yoser mikama devarim hashnuyim bebameh tomnin. Tosis's first question is that even if the oven is gerufa uketuma, even if you remove the coals, and even if you put ashes on top of the coals, it adds more heat than many of the things that the Mishnah listed as adding heat. The Mishnah has a list of stuff that adds heat, like the residue from the olive press, right? Obviously, coals, which are covered with ashes, add more heat than residue from the olive press. So Tosfos's first question is that Grufa uketuma should not help. If the concern is hatmana, the concern is insulating, and insulating means insulating with something that adds heat, well, even if you do Grufo Ketuma, it adds heat. It adds more heat than all the stuff that's mentioned in the fourth parak. The old, moreover, Chanan Yeshari Lahashot after She'ina Grufa, Velo Azur Mosef Hevel Eladavka Bahatmana, Avalahashot Shari. Right, the opinion of Chananya that our Gemara is going to deal with. Chananya is the opinion of Chofam and Aleph, who says that once food is cooked, Kimacho ben Shusoi, once the food is cooked, half or a third cooked, is cooked enough that a fleeing fugitive will eat the food. That's who ben Shusoi was. Ben Shusoi was a known bandit at the time of the Gemara, who would eat partially cooked food. Because, hey, listen, he works very hard. He has to rob homes, right? And he doesn't have time to really cook the food because he's worried he'll be caught. So he'll eat partially cooked food. Chananya says, when the food is partially cooked, you can leave the food on an open fire. Tosa says, 1 second! You're leaving food on an open fire? That food is going to get hotter. If it's getting hotter, so then it should be a problem, according to Rashi, because it's Mosef Hevel. So Tosis' kashas basically boil down to, hey, Rashi, how can you say that our Mishnah is about Hatmana, or is even about Hatmana, the way the Ran says it, when even if you do Garef V'Katum, there is more Hevel, it adds more heat than many of the stuff that are listed in the fourth Perek. Moreover, how is it possible that you're allowed to leave food on an open fire? It's adding heat. Well, Rashi is going to say, gentlemen, in response to question two of Tosis, Rashi is going to say, hey, you know what? Chananya, who says I'm allowed to leave food that is cooked a third of the way on an open fire, Chananya is going to say, I'm allowed to insulate food that is cooked a third of the way also. Rashi is going to say, my einikol is gerecht. My grandson, the Rashbam, is correct. Once the food is cooked a third of the way, it's permitted. That's the response to the second question. But how do I respond to the first question? The first question that Tosis asks, right? Tosis is saying, hey, Rashi, you're telling me that the problem is that it's Mosef Hevel. The problem is that it adds heat. But you know what, Rashi? Even if you take the coals out, even if you do Garuf, and even if you put ashes on top of the coals, still, it adds more heat than the stuff in the fourth parak. So if you're worried about adding heat, how does this help? So, first an observation, and then a comment. The observation is like this. I don't know if any of you noticed, but the way Tosfos asks the question on Rashi is different than the way the Ran asks the question on Rashi. Tosfos asks the question from Gerufa Uketuma. You saw that? I just read the Tosfos. But look at the Ran. By the way, who was the Ran? When and where did he live? So the Ran is Rabbeinu Nissim of Girona. He lived in Spain. He was the rabbi of Barcelona after the Rashba, before the Rivash. He lived 1320 to 1367. Right? I'm 46 now. Scary thought, no? But the Ran is the last of the Sephardic Rishonim, the school of Rishonim that begins with the Ramban and the Ritva and the Rashba, etc. The Ran is the last one of this group. The Ran summarizes his predecessors. When I was in 11th grade, so my 11th grade Rebbe, I remember once asking a question, the contradiction in the Ran. So he says, Schwartz, you can't ask any contradictions in the Rans because everyone knows that the Ran is the last Rishon and he's summarizing different opinions. So sometimes he's quoting this opinion over here and that opinion over there. You can't ask any questions on the Ran. My 11th grade Rebbe is a very big Talmud Chacham, but like that takes the sail out of so many good ideas of Torah, no? You can't ask a question because someone is like writing summary positions. Like, you don't have to cite every position when you write a summary. If he cites this opinion over here and that opinion over there, and they seem to contradict each other, I think you have to resolve that contradiction. Okay, but be it as it may, the Ran on Tesvav in Daf Harif, Tesvav and Beis, the Ran asks the questions on Rashi only from Katum, not from Garuf. Did anyone notice this? The Ran asks, he says, if you pour some dirt on the coals, so it's still hotter than a lot of the stuff in the fourth parak. But he does not ask from garuf, from removing the coals. And that could be because the Ran understands that it's possible that if you remove the coals, and you assume, Natty, like that Rambam that I mentioned to you before, that maybe removing the coals means you completely remove the coals. You remove every last ember. So it's entirely possible that it's not Mosif Hevel anymore. You don't add heat. It is by definition cooling down. Now to say this in different words, the Me'iri. Me'iri is a Rishon from Provence. He is a contemporary of the Ran, but they live in different parts of the world. The Me'iri writes that, yeah, it's Mosif Hevel in the sense of it warms stuff up, but we have to focus on what we would say in physics means the direction of the vector that you're moving. There are things, again, in medieval thought, this was true. There are things that get hotter and things that right now are hot, but because they are getting colder, therefore they can't halachically be considered cooking. For example, we'll talk about this later on in the semester. Kli sheni is different than kli rishon, no? The food that, if I have a pot and the pot was on the fire, so that cooks everything, pretty much. But let's say I have hot water from that original pot, and I pour it into a second pot. That's called a kli sheni. Kli sheni does not cook most stuff in Judaism. Why not? The water is scalding. The water is really, really hot. What do you mean, halachically, it doesn't cook stuff? The answer that the Balei HaTosfos say is Kli Rishon, again, in medieval thought, this is true, Kli Rishon makes stuff hotter. It gets stuff to continue to warm up. But Kli Sheni, the stuff is getting colder over time. If that idea is correct, so now I understand why, according to Rashi, my coals are not Mosif Hevel anymore. Because, yeah, it still is really hot, but it is not adding heat. It's super hot, but because it's getting cooler over time, that cannot effectuate cooking. This idea is found in the Me'iri right over here in response to Tosus's question. Okay. Gentlemen, any questions, comments, observations, jokes? Yeah, Yoni?
Is it possible to say that the Rashbam isn't necessarily motive to Rashi that had Mana and Shigar equivalent, but rather his argument is that since they both ultimately stem from the same zero, like Vera Shema Yatman,
yeah, so it's possible.
What
Yoni is arguing is that maybe Rashi and the Rashbam are not the same. Maybe Rashi and the Rashbam are, or at least the Rashbam, maybe the Rashbam is not saying that Shekhiyah and Hatman are exactly the same,
but because both Shehiya and Hatmana are a concern that I might stoke the coals, so therefore they are governed by similar rules.
At least for certain things.
So that is possible, but if I would say that, you pretty much end up in the same place where I am. The difference between us is terminology rather than substance.
Isn't there like a very different conceptual understanding
though? Oh, yeah. Conceptually, they are different, but in terms of practical halacha, I don't know how much of a difference it makes. I want to follow up on this point with you and continue the conversation. Okay, gentlemen, any questions, comments, anyone else? We have Mincha and Yeshiva at 2:30, so we're going to try to finish like 2 minutes before 2:30, which according to my math is around 2:28. Okay, gentlemen, have a great day. God willing, we'll continue tomorrow, and we'll go on. Okay.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you.